It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. Normally, we have both Cecil and Wes, but today we have Cecil of Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell, of course. And with that, good afternoon, Cecil.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Wes is heading to court this morning, as many times happens. Wes, right. Of course, as many of our listeners know, is our litigator in the law firm of Harvell and Collins. And litigators, people who litigate, attempt to resolve conflicts, they are many times not in the office. They're out at depositions and mediation and arbitrations, and of course then finally in the courtroom. But anyway, I am here this afternoon, Lockwood, and I always enjoy our talks. And today I'd like to talk about the medical documents that we lawyers prepare. And this is a little bit of a shock, isn't it? Because who would think that a lawyer would prepare would prepare documents that are routinely used in the medical world? Yeah. But we do. And there are three of them. And they are the following, Lockwood. There is the health care power of attorney. There is the declaration of desire for natural death, or sometimes called the living will. And last but not least, there is the HIPAA release, or the Health Information Privacy Protection Act, known as HIPAA release. And so I want to talk about these three documents. We do prepare these three documents routinely when we are doing last will and testaments and powers, financial powers of attorney, and maybe even trust for clients. We also prepare these three documents that are utilized in the medical field. So let's go through them, Lockwood. First, of course, is the healthcare power of attorney. And similar to the financial power of attorney, it is the grant of authority to an agent, to a person, many times a family member, but it doesn't have to be a family member. It can sometimes be a neighbor, a close person in one's church, a friend, but many times, yes, it is a family member. And this is a document whereby we authorize someone to sign for surgery, anesthesia, diagnostic procedures, anything of a healthcare nature, in a hospital, a rehabilitation center, or a doctor's office. This gives our agent the authority to sign for us. Now, Lockwood, as you know, and I think our listeners know, this is only if we cannot sign for ourselves.
Right.
If the doctors and the nurses and the anesthesiologist can speak to us directly and come into our rooms, wherever we happen to be, and discuss with us the procedures, then they will do that. And they, of course, would prefer to speak to us directly. But if for some reason we've been in an accident or we've had an acute setback and they cannot speak to us because we're not able to talked to at that time due to this acute situation, then of course they're going to ask, well, who has the authority, Mr. Phillips, to sign for surgery for you? Who has the authority to sign for anesthesia? And that, of course, would then be your health care agent. So, Lockwood, this is a very important document. We're going to talk about kind of the cousin, if you will, the first cousin to this document, which is the HIPAA release, right now in a moment. But you can imagine in the age in which we live, and there is litigation very prevalent in the medical community, they really are becoming very strict about receiving these documents so that they have the legal authority, the doctors, the nurses, the anesthesiologists, the hospital itself has the authority to make decisions for the patient because they are unable due to the accident or due to, you know, a heart attack or a stroke or any kind of setback medically, they're unable to make these decisions for themselves. Very important document.
Real quick question for you, Cecil. These documents, are they time-specific? For example, And I'm thinking that in the case of a medical procedure, that you might go to the hospital, and I'm thinking that they might provide you with a health power of attorney. However, it's for a specific time, a specific event, let's say a surgery. Once mm-hmm. that's passed, and once they've released you, whatever the description of release is, that you're no longer under their care, does that power of attorney go away, number one? And number two, is it preferable to have, I'm assuming that there that does go away, if that's the case, is it preferable to have a continuum, if you will, for a health power of attorney?
The document that we prepare is enforceable as the client signs it. It requires two witnesses mm-hmm. and is notarized, the witnesses' Whoa. Signatures as well as the okay. signature of the principal are notarized, and it's effective as our clients walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's just kept in an important place. We, of course, keep adopt the document in our system as well so that we can PDF or email it to a hospital if a client were to call.
Okay.
Which, by the way, happens very frequently. And that's an advantage to having a law firm that really will not only prepare your documents, mm-hmm. I'm going off on a sideline here a little bit, Lockwood, but a law firm that will not only prepare your documents, but will stand behind them, will vouch for them, and will assist you and your family when the document is needed.
Okay, that's important.
That's
yeah.
an important point. But back to your question, they stay in effect until such time as they may be revoked or changed by a new appointment, which is usually why they are changed, is that, you know, a wife or a son or a daughter unfortunately passes on mm-hmm. and we need to redo the document. So the health care power of attorney, much like also the financial power of attorney, Lockwood, just stays in effect until such time as it's either altered or modified or just revoked.
Okay.
Now, the first cousin to the health care proxy or health care power of attorney would be this Information Protection Act document known as a HIPAA release. And Lockwood, our listeners, as well as you and myself, know that we are signing these everywhere we go.
Mm-hmm.
Even now when we go to the dentist, they give us in the lobby
yes.
a HIPAA release.
Right.
Certainly at the doctor offices, at any kind of hospital, an imaging center, any kind of place that we go for medical and or even dental treatment, they want to have on record in their chart a HIPAA release so that they are authorized to give copies of the medical records to whoever is enumerated or mentioned in mm-hmm. the release.
Right.
And again, usually this is our family member, our spouse, our son, our daughter. Doesn't have to be. As I said earlier, it can be a friend or neighbor, member of our church, but whoever is named in the document.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're signing these everywhere we go, Lockwood, but suppose we are at a place that we never, ever in a million years dreamed that we would be. We're at the Cleveland Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the Mayo Clinic. We're at Sloan Kettering. We're in Atlanta at the Shepherd Spinal Center. We're at Chapel Hill. We're
right.
at Wake Medical. We're at Duke. Wherever we happen to be, we did not sign a release at these many places because we never anticipated that we would be there. But now we are. Also, when we travel, what if something happens when we're traveling and something happens with the North Carolina document, but something happens in Ohio or
mm-hmm.
Michigan or Texas as we're traveling through? Again, we would not have had a HIPAA release at any of these places because we did not anticipate being there. So this is a very important document. We, again, keep it in our important papers, and then if anyone in the family needs it, we can retrieve it and PDF it, email it, send it to the medical provider so that they are allowed to give the medical records to our family members. And I have to hasten to say, if you in your family do not have this medical release, then the door is going to be shut as to your family being able to obtain your medical records.
Right.
Sometimes clients say to me, but I'm I'm the only child. Mm-hmm. I'm all my parents have. Or even sometimes people say, goodness gracious, that's my wife or that's my husband. It doesn't matter. It's not in writing, Lockwood, and we have to have the medical release in our files, signed and notarized, so that the medical provider will feel legally comfortable handing over the medical records to our appointed agent. They're not going to just do it based on a relationship or a verbal communication or any of those kinds of things. We need this document in our files.
You know, I'm going to interrupt here very quickly, Cecil, because this is a topic we've spoken about in the past, and it's one that I think a lot of family members, particularly young families, should consider. I know that they think and you just said something a moment ago, regardless of relationship. For example, you have an 18-year-old who's off at college, or 19-year-old, or 22-year-old who's off in college or just starting out in life. You know, a lot of us think we don't think about this. However, if they have an emergency situation, we don't have the records, we can't make decisions for our children, can we?
That's correct, Lockwood. That is absolutely correct. And if we don't have this documentation for our very young children who are now of majority age, mm-hmm. which is 18, as you mentioned, then it can, in some circumstances, lead to a court-appointed guardianship situation, in that the parent does not have the legal authority, and the only way to get the legal authority, to get the medical records, to make a medical decision on behalf of the child, to make a hospitalization decision, a rehabilitation decision, is to have a guardianship. And Lockwood, we have had these files in our office. They are unfortunately sometimes things we don't really want to talk about, do we, Lockwood? Because there's a tragedy involved. A young child, 19 years old, 20 years old, is in a terrible automobile accident and is unconscious and is potentially even, you know, paralyzed, and is uplifted to Shepherd Center in Atlanta, and then the parents are trailing behind, and in the midst of all of that emotional trauma and psychological and spiritual trauma, they are now confronted with a legal guardianship, mm-hmm. because the medical treatment is so significant, and the medical team is just not comfortable unless they have these legal documents. You know, that's the general rule, and that's absolutely true, what I just said. But imagine if the parents are divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Who do they listen to, you see? There's no longer a custody order in effect because the child is 19 years old,
uh-huh.
you see. So you run into issues very, very quickly with this, and so you bring up a good point that at the time that our precious kids become 18, and it happens very quickly, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And in a heartbeat, you know, all of a sudden our little toddler is 18 years old, and they're off to college. It is time to get these documents done for them.
I know a lot of people are listening to this and thinking, I'm talking grandparents or uncles or aunts. Maybe the parents themselves are listening to this and they're thinking, oh, this is not a big deal. It's not a big deal until it is a big deal, Cecil. And
that's right.
When we first broached this subject a while back, it uh-huh. really opened my eyes to the extent, let me just say very quickly, I personally notified my children to make sure that they were providing for a HIPAA reform and all of these power of attorneys before they went off to college. Because once they're gone, you can't bring that back.
It's a point that just so many times doesn't get discussed. I'm glad that we are discussing it. I'm glad our listeners are hearing it. just something that's kind of just not discussed, swept under the rug,
right,
unintentionally. So people just think that, well, gosh, my child is, you know, at Chapel Hill. My child is at Wake Forest. Surely if something were to happen, I have the legal authority to come over there, you know, to Chapel Hill and make decisions for my child medically who's been in an accident. Well, guess what? Not necessarily. Now, Lockwood, so far we've talked about the health care power of attorney, and we've talked about the HIPAA release, both being very important. The last medical document that we lawyers prepare is called a declaration of desire for a natural death, or sometimes known as the living will. And this is very important. We've got about 10 more minutes here, Lockwood.
We're good.
Important to discuss that this is not a do not resuscitate. So a declaration of desire for natural death is a North Carolina legislative approved document whereby we state that if we are in a persistent vegetative state, not the emergency room, not just for a day or two, not even a week or so, but there has to be a determination by the medical team that our circumstances are persistent.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are in a persistent vegetative state, and if the medical team perceives that the only thing that is prolonging our life is artificial nutrition, artificial hydration,
mm-hmm,
artificial breathing machines, ventilator,
mm-hmm,
all of these artificial medical equipment and technology can at that point be terminated and we can be allowed to die naturally or have a natural death.
Okay.
So this is a document that requires all of these conditions precedent that I just mentioned, persistency, and even after a persistent vegetative state, what if these machineries are not being utilized? I mean, many times, and I would say probably most times they are, but again, it is a termination of very specific things: artificial hydration, artificial nutrition, artificial breathing. So it is a declaration or a decision made by a person signed in our law firm at a law office, witnessed and notarized, again requiring two witnesses and notarization, that we desire to have a natural death. In my office, though, on an everyday basis, Lockwood, two things get confused with this document.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, well, Mr. Cecil, is this a do not resuscitate? And it is not a do not resuscitate. Your lawyer cannot prepare, Lockwood, a do not resuscitate. A do not resuscitate, I like to call it a prescription from your attending physician after full and complete consultation with your medical doctor, after your medical history, many times stops and starts, if you will. There is then a conscious decision made by your doctor with your approval, with your consent as the patient, that if for some reason circumstances evolve, then EMS and the emergency room are directed to not resuscitate. That is a DNR. That is the order of a physician based on all of the attending circumstances. It is not a legal document that a lawyer can prepare.
Okay. The other
thing that gets confused with the natural death declaration of desire for natural death, this happened to me just yesterday, is the lady mentioned, well, I really do want to have, if I were terminal and incurable and I had some terrifying disease like ALS or mm-hmm one of these kinds of debilitating situations, I really want to have assisted suicide.
Mm.
And will this document help me with that? And, of course, the answer is, again, this document does not apply to that. Lockwood, I'm sure you know, and I'm sure our listeners kind of know, that more and more states in the United States of America are now passing legislation that allows that if a patient is terminal and is going to die based on the medical medical opinions, mm-hmm. that there are certain avenues whereby that patient can be assisted in terminating their life in a environment. Mm-hmm. Okay, these laws used to be, so that our listeners hear about it, because we do follow them at Harvell and Collins. We, by the way, have nothing of this sort yet in the state of North Carolina. But Lockwood, it is likely coming.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these assisted death, if you will, based on very specific circumstances, these laws were are prevalent mostly on the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
Oregon, Washington State, California,
right.
Some other Western states. But here in the last, say, 5 to 7 years, they have moved east up to the Northeast,
mm-hmm.
up to states such as New Hampshire, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island. Now, don't hold me to these exact states.
No, I understand.
But I do know that in the Northeast, there are several states that now have statutes that whereby the law will allow a physician under very specific circumstances to assist a terminally ill patient with the the word just won't come to me. What do they call it, Lockwood?
Well,
with
the termination of life, but
termination of life, but in a in a way that is very dignified,
yes.
a dignified manner.
Yep.
In a dignified manner, death with dignity, I think, would be one of the things might get Googled, if you will. Death with dignity, that's the word. So these laws are coming our way, but our listeners are advised that as of right now, we good people here in the state of North Carolina do not have a death with dignity statute. And so there you have it, Lockwood. Who would ever think that on a daily basis a lawyer is preparing 3 medical documents for clients, but we do. The healthcare power of attorney, the HIPAA release, and the declaration of desire for natural death. These are the 3 documents that we routinely prepare for our clients when they are in our office for estate planning.
I have a quick question for you, Cecil, and this having to do with health power of attorney particularly. And of course, we talk about powers of attorney, I guess is the proper description of plural, powers of attorney, often. But how is this related to a general power of attorney? For example, you may have the general power of attorney for my well-being, but is it possible that I would have given my health power of attorney to another family member or something of that nature?
Absolutely, absolutely. I love that question. Lockwood, we all have our strengths and our weaknesses,
mm-hmm.
and so clients say the following. Well, you know, my daughter's a CPA. My daughter is a banker. My daughter works at a financial institution. She would be the perfect financial power of attorney. But my son is a physician, or my son is a registered nurse, and so I would like for my son to be in the healthcare power of attorney, but my daughter would be the best choice as executor and as the financial power of attorney. So absolutely, Lockwood, we modified these documents significantly. Here's another very common thing. I talk so much on our program about second marriages, mm-hmm.
yep.
clients in second marriages or
right.
third marriages even. Well, clients in second marriages, many times the husband of that second marriage is going to want to appoint his children in the health care arena. And the wife in the second marriage is going to want to appoint one of her children because, after all, their children are not collective children. This comes up routinely that the wife would appoint in a second or third marriage, might appoint one of her children, and the husband would appoint one of his children from his prior marriage.
Now, is it also beneficial to have multiple in stages, 1, 2, and 3, individuals
yes.
listed on the as the power of attorney?
Correct. That's right. Always.
Okay, because
we always need alternates.
Okay.
And this, of course, is sometimes perplexing to clients. Clients
right.
always, Lockwood, know that first. Oh, yes, well, it's each other, and then it's John. And then when I say, well, now we need an alternate to John, that's when I get, you know, the pregnant pause.
Right.
Well, we're going to have to go back home and think
about
that.
Yeah.
But we do need alternates. After all, you're appointing John because John is a very special child, let's say, or
mm-hmm.
maybe it's a friend or a neighbor, whatever. Well, special people are the kinds of people that we travel with, we go out to dinner with, we're with on a routine basis. That's why they're named in the document, because they're a special person. Well, it's all the more likely that potentially we would be together and something could happen. So we absolutely need alternates to all of these appointments.
Okay, and then the question related back, and I go back to this issue of the HIPAA form. I stress over it because a lot of parents, and this is the right time of year to be thinking about this, a lot of parents are preparing for their children to go off to school and or leave the nest, if you will, and they are doing so solo. And as a result, they don't have anyone to rely on in case of an emergency medical situation, as you mentioned, maybe a car accident or something of this nature. The aspect of the HIPAA form, is there a benefit to having alternates on that as well?
Yes. Every document that we prepare, these very, very important life documents,
mm-hmm.
the last will and testament,
right.
the trust agreement, the powers of attorney, the HIPAA releases. We always need to appoint someone and then an alternate and then very likely even another alternate because things change. Keep in mind, and it's not always that our appointment dies.
Right.
The ultimate unavailability, but maybe they're sick at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they are unable to do the duty because they are fighting a cancer. They're in a chemotherapy. They themselves have been in an accident.
Right.
And I'm talking about the people that we appoint. So we need alternates to our appointments, to our executor, to our trustee, to our agent under our health care and our financial powers of attorney. We absolutely need alternates. And we at the law firm help clients find those alternates. Many times they don't know the exact name when they come in because they've only thought of their immediate,
the, right.
each other, and then their firstborn child.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just easy. But now we've got to go deeper and find some alternates to that first child. Who is next? And after usually conversation and they have discussion at home, they can call in and give us the alternates. But that's very important.
All right. We'll be wrapping it up here with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And I stress this a very important conversation here this afternoon on the issue of powers of attorney, but particularly things that, as Cecil said at the very opening, would we ever imagine that a lawyer would be preparing 3 medical documents, but they are, of course, the issue of a health care, power of attorney, the declaration of death, and then the HIPAA form. The HIPAA form, of course, is it's an amazing issue. I have personal experience on that in that regard, Cecil.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lockwood. I enjoyed it.
Cecil Harvell, again, of Harvell and Collins here on Let's Talk Legal.